From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives to the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
Just the joy you get from watching it, like a JV wrestler. Getting his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw. He's going. Touchdown. Michigan State wins it in overtime.
Yes, is that time once again. I know all of you out there can't wait until that clock strikes 1 o'clock every afternoon, can you? It's time for Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's Thursday, June 27th, 2013. Such a beautiful day in mid-Michigan right now. As always, we have lots to cover, including the Detroit Tigers, who get stung again by the LA Angels. They just can't seem to beat this team. Also, Adrian Payne makes it to the Sweet 16. Yes, inches a bit closer to playing overseas, and notable names just dropping like flies over there at the prestigious Wimbledon tennis tourney. And of course, we have another great guest joining us. He's a Lansing sports legend. Keep it locked right here. Current Sports starts right now. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Remember that you can let your voice be heard here on the show. It's pretty simple to do so. Follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports. Email me at AlMartin@WKAR.org. Don't be shy. Hit us up. We want to hear what's on your mind. And of course, you know that you can give us a ring here at Current Sports by calling 517-355-9527. Well, we've had a great week so far here on Current Sports. We've had Tim Wendell on Monday talking about his book, which discusses the influence of Cubans on the game of baseball. Clyde Weir was Tuesday's guest, Detroit Tigers scout for 28 years, gave some great insight as to what's going on with the Tigers this season. And yesterday, we talked with Doug Wilson, who has a new book that focuses on the life of legendary Detroit Tigers pitcher Mark Fitterich. All were fantastic. And we continue that streak of fantastic guests today with a man who has made his mark on the world of boxing in mid-Michigan. He has won several titles in Golden Gloves boxing and at one time was the number one boxer at the 126-pound featherweight division. Back in the day, he was also nominated for the All-Army Boxing Team. It is truly my pleasure and honor to welcome Elmo Hudson to Current Sports. How you doing, Elmo?
Great.
You doing good, man?
Great.
All right, let's dive right into it. Elmo, talk about when you first started boxing. How did it come about?
Well, I went down to Capital Caravan Center, and this boxer was hanging on the ropes and asking, did anyone want to box him? You know, and no one wanted to box because he's so tough. And I said, I'll box you. And so I got in the ring, and I boxed him. And so Dave Shaw, who just was inducted to the Lynch Sports Hall of Fame, asked me if I wanted to come out for boxing. I said, yes, I'll come out. And that's how I got started.
Wow, that was the moment right there. How old were you during that?
I think I was maybe 19.
19 years old. That's when you started. Now, when did you realize that, hey, I'm pretty good at this boxing thing?
Well, I went 6-1 my first year. And so, it just came natural. Mm-hmm. You know, I was working 4-week days and 4-week nights at General Motors. And the only time I could train was when I was on days.
Right.
You know, when I was on nights, I couldn't train. I had to go down to YMCA and work out by myself, just keep in shape. But I was in A1 shape.
Wow. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Elmo Hudson. He is a legend when it comes to Lansing sports. At one time, the number one boxer at the 126-pound featherweight division. Back in the day, he was also nominated for the All-Army Boxing Team. Now, let's get into the military aspect of your life, Elmo. You were drafted in the Vietnam War, right?
Yes.
Talk about that moment.
Yes, I was drafted during the Vietnam War, April the 14th, 1966, and got out April the 1st, 1968, and took basic training at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and AIT in Aberdeen Proving Grounds, Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland, and my duty station main duty station was Fort McClellan, Alabama, in Anderson, Alabama, Fort McClellan. Mm-hmm. And I go on a Third Army boxing team there. And we went to a tournament in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And I was nominated for All Army there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you were drafted in Vietnam?
Probably around 21. Around 21, yeah.
Gotcha. Now, like I said, when the draft was happening, because my uncle also, he fought in the Vietnam War. He was drafted when he was around 23, mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah. And that was just a period in time in our country mm-hmm. that really shook everyone up.
Yes, that's true.
How did you get drafted? Did you get a letter in the mail, or how
yes,
did that happen?
Yes, I got a letter in the mail. And I thought I was going to Detroit just for a physical. But they didn't send me back home. They sent me right straight to Fort Knox.
Wow, straight to Fort Knox. What was going through your head during that moment? Did you ever think about death? Did you ever think, I mean, what kind of things were going through swirling through your head? I mean, you were a young guy at that point.
Yeah, that's true. And, well, the sergeant, you know, he had a lot of respect for me because I was a boxer. And it was hard for me to do a lot of things. And, you know, to say, yes, sergeant, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he told me, you just try to say it, you know, and work with me, you know, and I got over it.
So the discipline aspect was a little hard.
Yeah.
Ladies, we're talking with Elmo Hudson. He is, at one time, the number one boxer at the 126-pound featherweight division. Back in the day, also nominated for the All-Army boxing team. Also, you know, involved in Golden Gloves boxing. And Elmo, so when you were over there in Vietnam, what type of things did you see?
Well, I see a lot of airplanes flying over, helicopters going over, you know, with carrying the sick and so forth, et cetera. And I wasn't in the actual fighting, but I was supplying the troops out in the field.
Okay.
You know, and a couple of times, you know, I was out on duty and waiting for the Viet Cong to come through, but they never got through, thankful.
Gotcha. So you were never involved in the fighting then?
No, not exactly, but I was in Fantiette for a month on a TDY on assignment there, and that was a war territory, and you know, it could have been, you know, but none of them got through. So
thank God.
That's right.
All right, so Elmo, going back to your boxing career, mm-hmm. talk about some of the highlights of your career.
Well, I boxed for Dick Letts. Probably everybody mostly know Dick Letts. And so, anyway, he was inducted in the Land Sports Hall of Fame, and I won state my first year through him. And I boxed him for the Capital Caravan Center. I started out that way, but Dick Letts, who was African American. Evan S., who was the CEO of boxing since 1947. Mm-hmm. And if I could box for him, and Evan S. told me, go ahead and box for him, you know. And so I took state my first year because he was a great trainer.
Wow. Yeah. Right. For those who don't know Dick, who is Dick?
Dick Glass was a humanitarian. And he was always at the football games, you know, controlling the African Americans. Mm-hmm. You know, in football games, basketball games, boxing matches, or whatever they had, you know, where African Americans together. Skating rings, the clubs over on the west side of town. He was always there, keeping the peace. Mm-hmm. That's what he's known for. He loved that.
Wow.
And everybody loved him. And they got a golf outing every year in his honor. And he also became the director of the Lansing City Hall, director of the human relations at the City Hall. And his wife was, I think, the first black principal at Lincoln High School, at Lincoln, you know, elementary school.
Right.
And she tutored my wife. You know, she went there.
So you guys have been in Lansing. You and your family have been in Lansing. You said you moved here when you were 4 years old, right? You were born in Arkansas. There.
Yeah, Arkansas, yeah. Arkadelphia, Spring Hill, Arkansas, a smaller town, but the big town is Arkadelphia. Everybody know about Arkadelphia, Arkansas, yeah.
Gotcha.
And I went to school down there when my junior year. I left home and went to school down there for about 5 months, so I got to know everybody, you know.
Now, Elmo, we talk about you being involved with Golden Gloves. Yeah. I mean, you were ranked number one at one time at the 126 weight division. Mm-hmm. You were pretty good.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about possibly going pro?
Well, evidence, he said, you know, you're not thinking about turning. Are you thinking about turning pro? He said, you know. He said, I wouldn't turn pro, you know. It's a rough sport, you know, when he invited. He was the second flyweight in the world, I think, in maybe England somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. And so he was great, you know, he said himself.
So why didn't you? What were your thoughts? Why didn't you turn pro?
Well, one thing, it was no money at that time for the lower weights. Everything was in the heavyweights or light heavy, but mostly the heavyweights back then. Mm-hmm. You know, but now in the small weights, they get just much more than heavyweights, you know.
Right.
But back then, it was no money in it, you know, you get beat up for nothing.
No money. Now, what year are we talking about?
64, 5, and 6, and 69. Mm-hmm. Those years I fought, and a couple of years I was in the service, and I fought 1 year in the service before I was drafted, well, was sent over to Vietnam.
Right.
But M&S, he was so, you know, enthused about how I used to train. I used to train so hard, and he just look at me, just shake his head and smile, you know. He thought a lot of me. And he gave me the new M&S Appreciation Trophy that just came out. That was the second year it came out. He gave me that. And he's one of the reasons I won Lansing, that I received Lansing Box of the Year.
Right.
And he told me, he said, they don't want to give you Box of the Year because you was black. And I told him, you should have won it every year you fought. Mm-hmm. And so they built up so big, you know, and I was there anyway. Should have received it anyway. And so they gave me Box of the Year, you know, because of him.
Now, for you, talking about the racial aspect of this story, mm-hmm. you being an African-American boxer mm-hmm. during the 60s where there was a lot of racial tension during that time, mm-hmm. how did you deal with that, not only as a boxer, but as mm-hmm. an individual just living?
Well, with me, you know, it was I lost the difference because I was number one. Everybody wanted to see me fight. You know, Evan S., he took my time at the old Lansing Civic Center, mm-hmm. you know, just for the fights. He said, you know, so every time I put you on, you know, early because you are featherweight, when you get through fight, everybody start leaving. He said, you mind if I put you on last so everybody stay because everybody want to see you fight? I said, all
right. Right. So he kind of was the guy to kind of put you on the
map. He thought a lot of me, of my training, you know, of my dedication, you know, just a good person, you know.
Right. That's great. Yeah. Elmo, now the game of boxing has certainly evolved over the years when it comes to the amount of weight divisions that you have, less rounds in the fight now. Mm-hmm. A lot of people call it political. Mm-hmm. In your eyes, have these changes really hurt the brand of boxing?
Well, I think it has to a certain extent because, you know, a person really had to really train to go 15 rounds, but 3 rounds less, he'd have to train as hard, mm-hmm. you know, so it's less work, you know, in that aspect of it. But it's a lot of politics in it, you know, and a lot of people don't want to get involved in a lot of politics, but it's a great sport, you know.
Right. Now, where it stands right now, I mean, it's no question that boxing's popularity has dwindled over the years.
Yeah, that's true.
It's no longer on mainstream
TV.
That's right. Why has this diminished over time?
Time.
Just time, huh?
Time brings forth changes. You know, we used to fight in teams. You know, every city had their own boxing team. Mm-hmm. And we fought teams, you know, right. from flyweight all the way to heavyweight. You know, we go against St. John's, Owosso, Bella Creek, Albion, and places like that. And then for the state meet, we go to Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. you know. And they have their teams. And all those state champions goes there to fight each other and see who become number one, that who will qualify to go to the Nationals.
Right. It's no longer like that.
No, it's no longer like that now. No, I mean, everything is gone. You know, like I said in the State Journal in 1966, in the semifinals, that Hudson was challenged before 4,000 fans. A Golden Gloves champion fell Wednesday night, but it took a Golden Gloves champion to topple him. Mm-hmm. Elmo Hudson, 3-time just Golden Gloves champion, was named Lansing District Boxer of the Year, you know, and things of that sort. So I got a lot of write-ups, you know. Like I said, Dick Gillette said, Hudson is the most dedicated boxer in the city of Lansing. Mm-hmm. You know, and things of that sort. And that's F&S, you know, when I was going against the Knockout King from Portland and said, Hudson, he think that he has F&S. Who you think going to win? And F&S said, well, you know, it's hard to pick against the champion. In this case, you're 3. But the sports writer picked this other person, Doug Stemler, to beat me. And the sports writer, Jim Wallace, he said, well, I think Stemler a knockout Hudson. He knocked out everybody except one. And the last 5 didn't even go the distance. Mm-hmm. And he said, all he takes is one Sunday punch and Hudson be down like all the rest. Mm-hmm. And they put him to fight me in the semifinals. I was the defending champion. He should have fought me, but in the finals. Mm-hmm. And another state champion that came down from 112 to 126. Those two should have been fighting first, and the champion fight me. But they wanted 2 white champions.
Gotcha. So a lot of racial tension.
That's right. But I upset him. on the first ever beating.
Wow.
He, I don't think he ever boxed again.
Wow.
And he had
wow.
eight fights and seven knockouts, PKOs.
What year was that?
1966.
1966.
Yep.
Man, it's truly an honor. I'm just soaking up all of the wisdom and knowledge right now. Elmo Hudson, legendary boxer in mid-Michigan's history. Number one boxer at one time at the 126-pound featherweight division. Golden Gloves champ. Also nominated for the All-Army Boxing Team. Elmo, for you, I mean, you grew up in the area. You saw the Alis and the Frazier's and the so on and so on. Mm-hmm. For you, who do you think the greatest boxer of all time is?
Greatest boxer of all time. But to me, I would say Sugar Ray Leonard. You know, but all time, before then, I say Joe Louis. That was my idol coming up.
Joe Louis. Talk about Joe
Louis. The Brown Bomber.
The Brown Bomber. I mean, a man who has such Detroit influence.
That's right.
I mean,
That's
you
right.
can go
sure
way
did.
And way back. That's I mean, right. talk about his influence on the game, not only just boxing, but culture, period, during your time.
Well, I think he had a great influence because the fact that during that time that, you know, every African-American, that was an opportunity for them to really be somebody, you know. And so, you know, boxing had its roots from him, stimulated from him. And as a result of it, all these teams came up and everybody wanted to box. The gyms was full. The Sanford Centers was all full, packed. Everybody was wanting to see the boxers, wanting to see everyone fight, you know.
Right.
And so it was a great thing. Everybody looked forward to Wednesday nights, you know.
Right. Unbelievable stuff, man. So, Elmo, now when we talked over the phone, you told me that you now mentor individuals who are in prison. I believe the organization is called, I want to get this right, Bellamy Creek Celebration Fellowship.
Yes.
And you go to the prisons and you mentor and share your story and provide some inspiration to those in prison. How did you get involved with that?
Well, I became a Christian on September 5th, 1972. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I got involved with the prison ministry, you know. And the reason I got involved was because I started out knocking on doors, going into projects. My brother-in-law put me... as the president of a witness group, had about 15 of us. And we go around in the projects and knock on doors, and I got a track made up and pass out my tracks and so forth, et cetera. That's how I got started. And then from there, I went on, everybody grabbed out one by one. I was the only one left. Mm-hmm. I used to be downtown passing out tracks, downtown Lansing. I mean, when everything was downtown.
Right.
And I was, you know, I had so such great influence, you know, with in people's lives, you know. A lot of them came back and said, well, you know, I never read a testimony like this. This is great, you know.
Right.
And things of that sort. And so that's how I got started. And then it just opened up, you know, for me to go to the prisons. And so I started going to prison. And I used to go on Thursday nights, every Thursday night, and once every month. And so it was great. And I dealt with kids that was probably from 13 until 21. And then they closed that up. And I sent him to Jackson, and then I didn't go anymore. And then the Lord opened up another door for me after I had prayed to go to Bellamy Creek. And that's where I'm at now.
What type of response do you get from these individuals when you go in there and share your story and try to motivate them and they hear your testimony? What type of response and feedback do you get from these people?
Great, great. I mean, as soon as I walk in there, you see them light up. You know, how you doing, champ? How you doing, box of the air? You know, and sit down in the group, you know, and... I give them a lot of insight in the Word of God because I've studied continually. And I got a whole lot of knowledge that most people don't have.
Right.
I mean, this is what I do. It's how I live.
That's a blessing in itself, Elmo.
Yes, I've been doing this for 40 years now.
40 years.
40 years as a Christian. 6 years single and 34 years married with three kids.
Wow. Now, Elmo, a lot of people don't know, you actually have a book sitting here right now. You just gave, thank you for this copy, by the way.
You're welcome.
Entitled Boxer of the Year.
Yes.
Hudson versus GM. Now, this deals with a civil rights lawsuit that you filed against General Motors.
Yes.
Talk about that. How did that come about?
Well, it came about, it was an altercation there, and, General Motors, with this, you know, white woman, and that was president from St. John's, and she didn't like blacks and everything and so forth. And this other African-American, always talk about Christianity, she didn't like that at all. And she didn't like me putting parts up on the line, you know, when they was defective parts, and that's my job. And she got upset and everything, and anyway, that's where it started, and then she called me a smart AS. And so I told her, you know, I do it, and then, you know, she started, you know, hit me underhanded, you know, like knocked me off. And I said, no, I told her, don't put it hurt my ribs. I said, don't put your hand on me. And she started swinging. I put my hands around her. And so Jenna Moses accused me of it. You know, everybody saw it and knew it was my fault. I didn't have to do it. I did everything to keep from fighting. And when I let go of her, you know, keep her from hitting me, she came up and hit me. She was about 250, but she was short. And everybody says she thinks she a man. And she put 3 stitches on my eyebrow, and I never got cut. Ever in boxing.
Right.
You know? Right. She had a big ring on. And so anyway, Jenna Morris took my job away from me. Mm-hmm. And they blamed me. And so I didn't have a choice because I was always known as a perfectionist. That's how I was taught, you know. And everybody knew that. And so it was I wasn't going to do it. I was just going to let it go, you know, turn it on the cheek, you know. But Jenna Morris got involved with it. They didn't want to let it go. They took my job away from me. And then everybody thought that it was my fault. So therefore, this assistant supervisor, this general foreman had already told my supervisor that was taking this place while he went on vacation for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. that he was going to get Elmo, you know. And she told me that, you know. I said, for what? I said I didn't do anything wrong. I couldn't help what happened, and I explained to her and everything, and so. So anyway, it was all set up and everything. And so but she said, well, you just twiddling your fingers. They're trying to sue you. You just twiddling your fingers. She said, if you would do something, maybe they'll stop. And that's when I started. Mm-hmm. And I went for 17 years.
17 years. So this case lasted for 17 years.
1983 to the summer, July 2000.
Wow. So what was the ruling? What was the ruling in 2000?
Well, the ruling was they took the case away from me. They took the case away from me, and Judge Thomas Brown, Randy Furman's wife, told me, he awarded General Motors $10,000, mm-hmm. you know, for attorney fees, you know, and put his hand and finger at me and said, and this will teach you to go against General Motors. That's what it was. But I didn't quit. I went home and prayed about it. The God would bless me with a tear to get me back in court again. I did the same thing, and I went to the civil rights, so forth, severed. I went through them and everything, and they just as crooked as the judge, all of them right together. Everybody fed to General Motors. You know, mm-hmm. but that didn't stop me. And when I got the information and everything, and went to another, he got another lawsuit, and in Charlotte, Michigan, was all racist, and it came back with General, well, you don't have a civil rights lawsuit, and so they awarded General Motors $58,000. My attorney said, well, we're gonna have to appeal, the African American attorney, and so anyway, say about a year later, he called and said, you know, it's time to give it up, you know, it's time to give it up. It's been going a long time. They're not gonna give anything. I said, God did not bring me this far for me to quit. I said, he blessed my wife through two dreams, and she blessed me to get filled with the Holy Spirit through a dream. And my mom said she even knew it before my sister had that dream. So the Bible said in Matthew 18:16, I'm off of two or three witnesses, let everybody be established, you know? And so about three days later, he called me back. He said, General Motors told their attorney to ask him to ask me how much would I sell a case for. And I gave them an amount. He called me a few days later and said, I got good news for you. They don't give you what you want.
Wow.
Amen.
That's just right. Like that. In just 2000, like that. It happened. Wow.
It's July 2000.
Wow. Right. So Boxer of the Year is Elmo's book, Hudson vs. GM. Elmo, when people read this book, what do you want them to take away?
Well, I want them to know that life will always be this way. It's no change in it. But what you have to do is just stand up for what's right. But you have to know, because the fact that you know how things are and everything, and there's no win, really. But with Christ in your life and the faith that I had, with all the prayers I've had to answer throughout the years and everything, I knew what was going to happen. I knew what I had to do, because my prayers would always continue to be answered. That's why I had to keep going, because I knew what was going to happen.
That's right.
And so that's where I'm at now.
So how can people get this book?
Well, you can get that book through, you can order it online, or go to Barnes & Noble's also, and Arthur House Publishing Company, and Amazon.com. All three of those places. And with Arthur House, the number is 1-888-280-7715.
You heard it right there. Elmo Hudson, he's won several titles in Golden Gloves Boxing, and at one time was the number one boxer at the 126-pound featherweight division. Back in the day, he was also nominated for the All-Army Boxing Team, and he has a new book entitled Boxer of the Year, Hudson versus GM. You just heard how to get it. Elmo, such a pleasure. Thanks a lot for coming on Current Sports.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, when we return to Current Sports, we'll dive into our Current Sports section of the show. We'll let you know we'll be taking your calls at 1:40. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on the incredible conversation I just had with Elmo or any of today's topics. Want to hear what's on your mind? Stay tuned. More Current Sports is next.
Sarah Dunant digs through dusty archives and library stacks to research her tales of the Italian Renaissance.
The trick, and probably the most difficult bit, has been finding the stories that make the history look effortless.
Her next act, On the Borgias, opened to glowing reviews in London. I'm Neil Conan, Sarah Dunant on her new novel, Blood and Beauty. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen that you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Hey, good people. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all the latest sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. Shout out to my incredible Current Sports team here. We're rocking the Rocky right now. Man, that's my favorite all-time movie series of all time, guys. Got to play some stuff like that for you. That shit chills up my spine right now. All right, we'll be taking your calls at 1:40. 517-355-9527. We'll discuss anything that's on your mind. We just finished having an incredible discussion with Elmo Hudson, legendary boxer in Mid-Michigan. He has a new book out entitled Boxer of the Year, Hudson versus GM. Man, was he great. We'll post on the website how you guys can get that book and the link to that conversation if you missed it. Right now, we're going to shake things up a little bit as we move into the current sports section of the show. I am going to invite production assistants Matt Lufke and Alex Shark to join me on this one. A lot to talk about. Let's get right into it. The Detroit Tigers, the LA Angels, they have just been, they really have the Tigers number right now. And they beat the Tigers last night 7-4, marking their eighth straight win over Detroit. And the Angels have outscored the Tigers 55-21 during this incredible 8-game win streak over the Tigers for the Angels. Miguel Cabrera and former Angels outfielder Torii Hunter, they homered for Detroit. Both homers came in the first inning. Miggy now has an 11-game hitting streak, so he's Mr. Consistent, of course. Now, emergency Angels starter Billy Buckner, he gave up 3 runs and 3 hits in 3-plus innings. He replaced Tommy Hansen, who was scratched after feeling tightness in his right forearm while warming up in the bullpen before the game. Now, Detroit starter Jose Alvarez, this is his third start. He allowed 4 runs and 7 hits in 5 2/3 innings. He left the game after giving up an Eric Abar 2-run homer with 2 outs in the 6th that put the Angels ahead 4-3. Now, Leland wants to limit the most effective relievers, Drew Smyly and, of course, Joaquin Benoit, to 1 inning. But he cannot do that if the starters don't produce, and they simply have been awful. Let's just put it out there. They have been awful these past 8 games. Now, entering Wednesday's game with the Angels, the Tigers starters had an ERA of just under 7 in the past 8 starts. They are not doing their job right now, and Leland said right-handed pitcher Anibal Sanchez, who is on the DL with that right shoulder strain, is, quote, coming along fine, but couldn't say when Sanchez will start again. Alvarez, he started in Sanchez's slot yesterday. Now, the last game of the 3-game series with the Angels is taking place right now. We'll give you a score update in just a sec if we have it. Oh, it's top of the second. Tied up. No score. 0-0 right now. So, guys, what in the world is going on with this Tigers starting pitching?
Well, let me tell you this. The big story for me from the game the other night with the Angels was Jose Alvarez and the fact that two pitches changed the whole game. The waiting on the change. I mean, there were two big pitches that just broke that game wide open.
Huge.
And a guy like Alvarez, who's trying to make a spot on a championship team in place of Sanchez temporarily, I mean, that's got to be a performance indicator right there that the farm system is not maybe not what we thought it would be. I mean, sure, he's had great performances, but...
Just one great performance, we've seen
Rondon come up, and he was going to be the closer, the favorite closer for the year. Then he had bad performances right back down. Remember Quinton Berry? What happened to him? Released from the Tigers. So, I mean, that's just a bunch of different, you know, farm system guys that are just... it feels to me that it's deteriorating a little bit.
Well, and you usually see with young guys who come up from the minors, they'll have a good outing or a few good outings, and then teams start to figure them out. They start to prepare for him because it's hard to prepare for a guy that you've never seen before.
Right.
And, you know, once there's a little familiarity there, you kind of know what to scout for. It seems like, you know, the guys in the majors kind of even things out. Everything sort of balances out, and the guys struggle when they after their initial success. But the Angels, man... do you guys think they're still angry about Cabrera beating Trout for that AL MVP? I mean, it seems like they're taking it personally.
They're taking it personal. I mean, just look at this. They have not – the Tigers just cannot beat this team right now. They're hot every time they step to the plate. And like you said, I mean, when you talk about Jose Alvarez, in his first outing, he was tremendous. And a lot of it has to do with they've never seen this pitcher before. I mean, he's coming out there. He's new. But, I mean, his next two starts after that, I mean, he hasn't been that impressive. So we'll see if the Tigers can get things back to going. Like I said, right now – it is tied 0-0, no score, top of the second. All right, the Spartans could strike again today with Chicago De La Salle four-starter offensive lineman Jamarco Jones slated to make his decision to possibly come to Michigan State and play football. He's 6'4", 300 pounds. Jones is rated as one of the nation's top 100 players in the 2014 class by all of the major recruiting services. He's scheduled to announce his college choice right after Current Sports at 2 p.m. at De La Salle High School. His finalists are MSU, Michigan, and OSU, Ohio State. So, big three huge schools right there. MSU is in the mix to get them. The Spartans now have fared well in the Chicago area with their 2014 class so far. Verbal commitments from Chicago Mount Carmel defensive tackle Enoch Smith Jr., St. Charles, Illinois North offensive tackle Chase, hope I'm saying this right, Giannakis. You guys know how to say that?
Giannakis.
Of course, Alex. No, he's the recruiting buff here. In Hillsdale, Central Center, Brian Allen. Now, the Spartans are still in the running with other Chicago area prospects like Lincolnshire, Stevenson safety, Mac Morrissey, and the son of former MSU linebacker, Jim Morrissey. So, interesting stuff. Jones could be the fifth Spartan verbal commitment since June 16th if he chooses Michigan State. And the Spartans 2014 recruiting class is up to 12 with the additions of Dayton, Ohio, Thurgood Marshall cornerback Vyante Copeland. We've reported on him. Orchard Lake St. Mary's cornerback Jalen Watts Jackson. Running back Gerald Owens. I mean, I could go on and on. So the Spartans really, really beefing up that 2014 recruiting class. Let's move on now. Adrian Payne. Payne made the cut today in Colorado Springs, Colorado, for the World University Games team that will play July 6th through the 17th in Russia. The 6'10" Michigan State senior forward is one of 16 finalists with the final 12-man roster to be decided later this week. So Payne, really impressive, guys. You guys think he's going to make the cut?
Absolutely. There's only so many 6'10", 240-pounders that can shoot threes, and he's one of them. He's a rare breed.
He is one of them.
Yeah, I can tell you. Not too knowledgeable in terms of what they're looking for. But, I mean, that definitely says something. He made the first cut, so.
Yeah, he made the first cut. I mean, he's looking really good. Like you said, I mean, Payne is a guy who, before he declared for the NBA draft, let's not forget, he was projected as a early first-round pick. So, right. This is a guy, I mean, now, Joe Rexburg did a great job reporting this for the Lansing State Journal. Of course, as I said, I mean, he was projected to go in the first round. But, of course, Payne says, quote, yesterday, that I made the right decision, and I'm not looking back. He said he's at 245. He's up about 10 pounds. This is a good thing for him, too, because I always said Payne has to gain a little weight. He can bang with the best of them, but 10 pounds or some more, you know, just a little more beef on him wouldn't help down low. Would definitely help down low, excuse me. And he's put on about 10 pounds, and he's really looking good. He's agile. A lot of good reports coming out about Payne. Now, if he makes it, he'll be teaming up with Michigan head coach John Beilein. How ironic is that, guys?
Weird.
John Beilein coaching Adrian Payne, Michigan and Michigan State. That's going to be interesting. But Beilein, who's an assistant coach on the team under head coach Bob McKillop of Davidson. So now, if Payne makes a team, who will become the 38th Spartan to play for a USA basketball team. Draymond Green, of course, was part of that 2011 World University Games team that finished fifth in China. So, interesting stuff. Payne, one of seven Big Ten players invited to try out for the team. Indiana guards Yogi Ferrell, Will Sheehy, Iowa forward Aaron White. They also made the Final 16, while Minnesota guard Andre Hollins and Iowa guard Roy Devin Marble were cut. All right, Aaron Hernandez, guys. This story just gets more interesting by the day. If you were watching a few days ago, now Aaron Hernandez, if you've been following with this coverage, he will be back in court today after with his whole murder. He was actually charged with murder, guys. Charged with murder. I talked yesterday about how he was let out of his house in his red shorts, white T-shirt, in handcuffs. ESPN had a snippet of him in court yesterday being read, his charges and everything. So George ordered Hernandez held without bail yesterday on a charge of first-degree murder and five weapons counts. Hernandez is accused of what prosecutors called an execution-style shooting of 27-year-old Olden Lloyd, a friend of a semi-pro football player. Now, prosecutors say Hernandez was apparently upset that Lloyd had talked to certain people at a nightclub.
Yeah, could there be a more vague description of what the, you know, inciting incident? Yeah, it's like, you know.
It's like little by little is coming up, coming out about this as days go on.
Right.
And to see this, I didn't think that he would actually be charged with murder.
Hey, you know.
It's unbelievable.
It just keeps picking up more and more steam. I just read on Boston.com that investigators are probing into a 2012 double murder that he might be involved in.
Wow.
So it's like, it just keeps getting worse. It's just a snowball with no end in sight.
Is this O.J. Simpson 2.0, guys?
Now, OJ's case, comparing it to Hernandez's right now, I think his was bigger just because, I mean, taking off in the Bronco and the whole chase with that. And then it was a lot of, I mean, OJ's case also brought in race to the factor, too. I mean, if you look at the whole, I mean, ESPN did a great documentary on that and captivating that entire moment in one of their 30 for 30 series, I remember. But that case just went off the charts. But this one has the potential to be close to it. It won't get there, but close to it. This is unbelievable, guys.
Well, one thing that this case does, that this case has that OJ didn't have, was that surveillance video of Hernandez holding the gun.
Yeah.
On video. Surveillance video.
On video, man.
Yet, it wasn't enough to charge him right away. It took a couple days to get to charge him.
Just, does he ever watch TV?
This
is going to sound so bad, but like, you know, the body is less than a mile from his house. You know, right. He's under a car under his name. It's just like, what are you doing?
What are you doing, man?
I not that I condone what he did at all. I mean, he obviously shouldn't have done it, but it's like, if you're going to do it, I mean, was he expecting to get caught?
I mean, he did
look pretty casual when he was being, you know, escorted out.
He's spitting
out
the bushes and everything. I mean, yeah, honestly, like, just, I mean, if you saw him in the courtroom, too, he's just like, oh, yeah, just read me. Okay, I'm being charged with murder. All right, okay. I'm like, dude, you just got charged with murder, and he's sitting up there so lackadaisical.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it, man. But this story just gets more and more intriguing. And then, you know, not even to mention the other suit that he has against him where he actually shot the guy in the face.
Right.
That was sitting next to him. I'm like, what? I mean, it's just, I mean, there's so much going on. I feel bad for the brother. Well, I don't feel bad for the brother.
Right.
Because,
yeah,
he's
reaping what he sowed.
Like, he's reaping what he sowed, you know?
It's ridiculous. Oh. You think that when you get to the NFL, start making millions, you kind of leave that stuff behind. But more and more you see guys don't do it.
Redonkulous, man. All right, Floyd Mayweather. This, guys, could be the biggest fight in the history of boxing today. In the history of boxing, period, I should say. Goodness. Of course, Floyd Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez. This fight is set for September 14th at MGM Grand in Las Vegas. It sold out in less than 24 hours this week. Now, the price is between $350 to $2,000 per ticket. The live gate of Mayweather-Alvarez should approach the record. This is what they're saying in Vegas. The record of $19 million generated in Mayweather's 2007 win over Oscar De La Hoya. This is set to eclipse that. MGM Properties in Las Vegas will be offering closed circuit seats for $100 for those who didn't get tickets, and the fight will be available on Showtime pay-per-view. I am looking forward to this one, guys.
Yeah,
it should be fun.
Oh, and I actually, you know, there's always the argument, do you put the $60, $75 down to order it on pay-per-view? It's expensive, especially with this new deal with Showtime.
Right.
But I personally did order the I'm a huge boxing guy. I love the Mayweather fights.
Love the Mayweather fights, Alex? They're so boring, man. I hate them.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they are so boring. A Mayweather fight is the most boring. I'd rather watch grass grow.
Let me tell you something.
But I will watch this one because I think he's actually facing somebody who has a chance of beating him.
A Mayweather fight is more than just what happens in the ring. The Mayweather post-game, the coverage,
okay.
The live aesthetic moments of Floyd.
I see what you're saying.
It's a total package for me.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, because the fight is garbage. Let's say that. The fight is garbage, but all the post-game antics. I love seeing Mayweather talk trash. I mean, that's something I do like seeing. But the fight, you know it's going to go 12. It's going to end up in a decision.
Yeah, but...
But the reason I may buy this one, Alex, is because I think Saul Alvarez has a chance of beating this guy.
I really do. How big of a chance do you think this guy has?
Oh, I mean, Saul, I mean, I think he's undefeated, right?
Yeah, but...
Undefeated, he's a young guy. Guerrero, he's quick. Yeah, but that's a different type of fighter, though. I think Alvarez is quicker than Guerrero. He's more ring savvy, if you will. His defense is better. Okay. I really think he has a better chance of beating Floyd than Guerrero did, so...
Interesting.
It's going to be interesting, man.
Well, the other thing about it is, the thing with Canelo is that if he does beat Floyd, like you said, he has a chance... That is just going to tarnish everything that Floyd is built against. I mean,
right.
It's just the image. This is undefeated image. And we'll get to something in a second, a little clip from one of the press conferences that you wonder if he does lose this fight, and he's very confident he's going to win it, what the consequences will be.
Well, let's hear it right now.
And once I get to 40, which I know I am, and I believe in my skills and I believe in myself, once I get to 49 and 0, when my career is over, now I'm gonna tell y'all everything that certain fighters done good and what they done bad, and why I had the advantage over all of them.
He's gonna reveal. So if he wins and beats Alvarez, he's probably gonna retire. That's what he's saying right now. And then after he does that, all of the secrets of how he's beaten all of these 49 fighters are gonna magically come out, and they're gonna be like, oh, that's how he beat.
So is he going to be the number one boxing analyst then on television?
I would love to watch Floyd Mayweather on TV analyze.
He'd probably be the highest paid analyst. I'm sure that's what he cares about more.
Without a doubt.
But
without a
honestly, doubt. Who stops at 49?
Right,
Are you crazy? 50 is such a round number. Why would you stop at 49 and 0?
That's a good question.
I would put tons of money on him having one more fight if he wins that one.
Exactly. All right, one aspect to this story I want to get to before we go to break, guys. On ESPN Radio in Chicago, Floyd added his name among the ranks of people who think King James, LeBron James, tops Michael Jordan. Mayweather, who is a huge NBA fan, is often spotted countless times at games. He may have stirred up some stuff. He says he thinks that LeBron is better than Michael Jordan. He came out and said it, and many are thinking he just said that because now he wouldn't confirm or deny these reports, but he actually bet $5.9 million on the Heat to win the championship. And when that fact was brought up, he says, quote, "I'm not here to talk about gambling. I like to gamble. I'm not here to talk about gambling. Let's talk about basketball. Let's talk about football. I'm a sports fanatic. I like to bet. Let's just say I like to bet." So I just think he said it because he likes to bet. And he just won 5.9, possibly more, on the Heat winning championship.
More.
I mean,
more.
I would possibly love more. To just watch him watch Game 6, because that must have been a roller coaster of emotions.
Right.
Nearly losing $5 million and then swinging into winning.
Well, you know what? From a Mayweather
view. He's loving LeBron right now.
Yeah.
From a Mayweather view, he's confident. He knows that if that shot didn't happen, he knew the Miami Heat were going to win the game. Regardless if they got lucky, he knew.
Just think,
it's Floyd. It's Floyd. He knows.
Just think, if Ray Allen didn't hit that shot, $5.9 million.
Oh, my gosh.
That is why athletes go broke, okay? And we had that conversation. I mean, $5.9 million. Yeah. All right, also want to note, guys, before we hit the break, the NBA draft is tonight, 7 p.m., Barclays Arena in Brooklyn, New York. Really interested to see who the Pistons get. We have some more topics to get to after we come from the break. And also, it is Throwback Thursdays. Stay tuned. More current sports is coming right up.
We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Space Jam. Here's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right. All right. All right.
On the next Fresh Air, how being African in America compares with being African-American. We talk with Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie about her new semi-autobiographical novel, Americana. Growing up in Nigeria, she wasn't defined by her race. When she came to America to attend college, she found herself in the middle of racial conflicts she didn't even understand. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
I love that joint. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We'll be taking your calls right now to discuss anything that's on your noggin, 517-355-9527. Give us a buzz, ladies and gents. It's also Thursday, so yes, right, Throwback Thursday. Mad Alex and I will let you know what happened on this particular day, this Thursday, in sports history. Before we get to that, though, update you guys on Wimbledon. Roger Federer, And goodness, I'm just, man, I chose Roger to win this too. There's no chance that anyone is beating Matt now. It's a wrap. Give him the trophy. Alex, I don't know what song you're going to be singing for karaoke on July 1st, but I look forward to it, man. It's going to be fun.
Don't count me out, man.
I've been flipping through Cher's catalog just to let you know.
Hey, no, just listen, kidding. You're going to regret it because the NBA draft is tonight.
You think you could come back?
I'm not going to rule it out. Hey,
we only get 1 point per correct pick, right?
That's 10 points right there if I get them all right.
Well, what's your standing?
I think I'm only like 10 points down from you, 10 or 12.
Well, I'm talking. Oh, you're coming. Okay, you're coming. Oh, okay, you're coming for second place.
I'm not
okay.
Trying to sing the song.
Right.
So you're trying to win. Right. I'm not trying to sing the song.
Hey, man, I'm like Teddy Pendergrass. I would be glad to sing a song. All right. I have a voice like Michael Jackson. All right. All right. Wimbledon update. 5-time champion Serena Williams, she avoided a kind of early upset that has plagued so many in this Wimbledon series. So far, she beat Caroline Garcia today, 6-3, 6-2. She is unbelievable right now. Serena Williams is rolling to reach the third round. The defending champion is looking for a 6th Wimbledon title and saw her two main rivals, Maria Sharapova and Victoria Azarenka, eliminated Wednesday. So many big names eliminated. And also, Roger Federer gets beat by the 116th ranked player in the world. He is knocked out. And of course, Rafael Nadal, he was eliminated on the first round Monday to Belgium's Steve Darcis, who was ranked 135th in the world. Federer, though, I chose Federer to win. He just, man, here he is after losing.
No, because I still have plans to play for many more years to come. So, it's normal that after all of a sudden losing early, after being in the quarters 36 times, people feel it's different. And you guys hyped it up so much, me playing Rafa, and we're both out. So there's a letdown, clearly. Maybe also sometimes a bit disrespectful towards the other opponents, actually, who are in the draw as well. And I think it sends a bit of a message to you guys as well, that maybe you shouldn't do that so often next time around.
Yes, that was Roger Federer after his loss to Belgium's Steve Darcis. Oh, man, Roger, I remember there was one time when Roger was like the man in tennis, but he loses. He's out of Wimbledon. Of course, I just mentioned that Maria Sharapova loses. Here's Maria after her loss.
I think it was a combination of everything. I give her a lot of credit. I think she played extremely well today. She was really solid from the baseline. I don't feel like I was aggressive enough that I hit the ball deep enough. I wasn't ready after the returns or the serves, and she's someone that plays extremely aggressive, and I just wasn't there.
And, you know, there's a lot of speculation, of course, with Maria Sharapova and Serena Williams, with the back and forth chatter that they had, with the comments or misquoted comments that were published in Rolling Stone magazine. And, you know, they were going back and forth, and Sharapova was asked if that was a distraction at all coming into her, her Wimbledon, reign.
I've handled a lot of things off the court in my career, and I'm a four-time Grand Slam champion. I've been number one in the world, so I don't know if you can call those things a distraction.
Interesting. All right, and the Bird is back. Larry Bird, that is, the former NBA star who left his job last season after rebuilding the Indiana Pacers, and winning the league's Executive of the Year award. He will be reintroduced to the media today. This morning, he was actually introduced as the president of basketball operations. That's the same job that he had from 2003 to 2012. And now he reportedly met earlier this month with Sacramento about becoming that team's general manager, and had become a regular in recent weeks as the Pacers held public draft workouts and making his imminent return. I love to see Bird. I think Bird was great, guys, when he was. Part of the basketball operations with Indiana. He was great there. The history behind this, in 1997, he returned to the bench to coach the Pacers in 1997. Of course, his home state team. He was the 1998 NBA Coach of the Year, and 2 years later led the Pacers into the franchise's only appearance in the NBA Finals. Indiana lost that year to the Lakers, of course, in six games, and Bird retired after the season in part because of health problems. And 3 years later, he became the Pacers. He came back to the Pacers in a front job office. What do you guys think about that move for the Pacers?
I love it. I think, and for Larry Bird, picking the Pacers over the Kings is probably like the easiest decision ever made. I mean,
it's a no-brainer.
But I mean, the guy is insanely competitive. He likes to get his hands dirty. He likes to be involved with things. And, he's the hick from French Lick. He loves Indiana. Right. He's been involved with that organization. I mean, I think it's good that he's back. He was kind of the architect of what they had. And when you look at when they struggled, it really was all about the malice at the palace. I mean, you can't really plan for that. I mean, they had great teams for that year and that era, and they fell apart, but now they're back, and I think he's a big reason why.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen other players go in other organizations around the league, and it's worked out a lot of the times. I mean, let's look at Joe Dumars. Right now it's a little sketchy, but returning to their hometown teams where a lot of history is rooted, always great, and especially in terms of fan support. You look at that in terms of a lot of organizations, and no better fan support than Larry Bird. How about Jason Kidd? Look at the fan support in New Jersey for that.
Yeah.
So I just think of it in a lot of different ways, yeah.
You know, an interesting part of that about Larry, and his success with Indiana as a coach and in the front office. I mean, if you look at a lot of the NBA greats over time, they get in the roles, coaching roles, GM roles, what have you. A lot of them don't have a lot of success. It's very rare. And Larry Bird was one of those guys. He was an unbelievable player, knows the game like the back of his hand. He's one of the few who got it right. Look at guys like Michael Jordan, of course, with the Bobcats. That's just a debacle over there. Isaiah Thomas tried coaching. He was terrible at it. I mean, I could go on and on. But Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson as well, though. I thought Magic Johnson did a solid job, with his stint with the Lakers.
But then he tried to host a talk show. And failed miserably. So you got to – you
very
can't
true.
Leave that
oh,
one
I
out.
Forgot about that. That
can't
was
leave that one out.
Terrible. Terrible talk show. But, Larry Bird, congrats to him, man. It's good to see him back in the NBA. All right, guys. Well, it's Throwback Thursday. It's when Matt, Alex, and I, we let you know what happened on this particular day in sports. A lot of interesting things, including Mike Tyson knocking out Michael Spinks in 91 seconds in Atlantic City.
Tyson along the ropes doing damage. Michael Spinks has keep moving because every shot. Uppercut landed inside and Spinks went down. It was the left uppercut.
I was surprised there was a body shot that put him to the canvas.
And that is the first time Michael Spinks has ever been down in a professional fight.
And he's down again and in serious trouble. A right hand right on the chin.
Six, seven, eight. He's not going to make it. It's all over. We know why Butch Lewis wasn't anxious for Michael Spinks to fight Mike Tyson.
Man, there was nothing like Iron Mike, guys. Nothing like him. He was a phenom. That was a call from Mike Tyson knocking out Michael Spinks in 91 seconds in Atlantic City. Unbelievable, guys. Do you guys remember that fight at all? I mean, we were young.
I was too young for that. But
yeah, too young.
Highlights, but yeah. Looks like an unbelievable fight to be
at. I mean, he's ahead of his time. That's like a UFC fight. 91 seconds, and he's 91. Doing that in boxing? I mean,
he was something else. And, you know, Vegas, I mean, Mike Tyson was Vegas. And the incredible crowds that he drew and the incredible phenomenon just of Mike Tyson. I mean, I believe that was like the last. Well, now Mayweather's kind of bringing it back. But, I mean, not only did Mike bring in money, but he also made it a show when he was in the ring. Like I said, watching Mayweather box is like, I'd rather watch grass grow, man. I mean that. I mean, it's so boring. But when you watch Mike Tyson, I mean, there was a chance of him knocking out an individual right when that bell rung for that first round.
Well, and here's the other part of the debate. Sure, in terms of knocking out, more excitement, I get that. But the one thing about Mayweather that I do love to watch, and yes, call me a Tim Tebow-ish kind of bandwagon on Mayweather. You can make that
argument. No, go ahead. It's fine.
But look, the thing about Mayweather is, for his frame, for his power, it's very rare to see a quick of a boxer and such an unbelievable defender in the ring.
Yeah, I will say that.
And
I
he's
mean,
very he's just a, it's very exciting to watch him in the ring because you don't see, you know, a lot of shiftiness and agility as much in boxing today as you used to.
Right. Mm-hmm. I will say that. I think when watching Mayweather fight, I mean, he's arguably, when his career is done, whether he's retiring after this Alvarez fight or not, I think he will go down as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, defensive fighters to ever step in the ring. I mean, it's very rare when you see Mayweather get hit or cut or anything of that nature. His defense is immaculate. And, you know, that's something I do enjoy watching when I am, if I happen to slip and fall and the TV's right there and I'm watching the Mayweather fight, all right? But I will watch Alvarez. I think it's going to be a great fight with Alvarez and Mayweather.
Oh, great fight.
So, man, I think you got some other stuff, man. What happened on this
I got
day?
A few things to run down here. We're going to keep it in theme with boxing. 1890, going way back for this one, George Little Chocolate Dixon becomes the first black boxing champion at any weight class. He was a bantamweight, he was Canadian, and he was the first one. He was 5'3", 87 pounds. George Little Chocolate Dixon. Can't make it up, guys.
No.
It's a different era. All right, let's move on. 1986, San Francisco Giants' Robbie Thompson was caught stealing four times in one game. 1990, this is going to blow your mind. Here's some economics. Jose Canseco signs the biggest contract in MLB history at that time. He was the highest paid player at $4,700,000 a year. So talk about inflation in baseball.
I'm telling you, man. What was that name one more time? One more time.
The Little Chocolate.
George Little Chocolate. Little Chocolate Dixon.
Wow. That is hilarious, guys. All right, thanks for that, man. Unbelievable stuff, man. Also, some other things to run down on this day in sports history. Anne White. You guys know who Anne White is?
I do, because I just researched it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only reason I know, too. Anne White, she wore a body stocking at Wimbledon on this day in history. Body stock. I haven't Googled it and looked it up.
How would that work?
What is a body stocking?
She looks like a speed skater. Or like Michael Phelps jumping in the pool. In one of the full garb.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Head to toe, basically.
Head to toe. Unbelievable stuff. Did you mention Bobby Hull? I don't know if you mentioned Bobby
Hull. I didn't.
Bobby Hull, he signed a 10-year hockey contract for $2.5 million. He became a player and coach of the Winnipeg Jets of the World Hockey Association on this day. Interesting stuff. Oh, go ahead.
I got one more.
Go ahead.
This is for the future of Throwback Thursday. Tonight, David Stern's last NBA draft.
Wow.
It'll be the last time he comes out on the stage and gets booed by everyone and smiles and loves it. It's one of the best things ever about the NBA, just watching him soak in the booze. Nobody does it like David.
He'll be soaking in a lot of them tonight.
Yeah,
all right. Well, before we leave, give a special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Of course, Alex Charg and Matt Lucky, always holding it down, production assistance. Intern Mike Corey, who really wish him well. If you haven't heard Mike's voice, he had a little bit of an accident. He'll be back next week, though. Engineer Aaron Young, Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Elmo Hudson for joining us. His conversation was unbelievable. Have a fantastic day, folks. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Rock out to some Michael Jackson as we leave you. Be easy, people.